The following is a presentation of the Matt Talk Podcast Network.
Welcome to On the Mat. I am Kyle Klingman of the National Wrestling Hall of Fame Dan Gable Museum, joined by a man who was one day away from being a citizen of Slovakia. That's Andy Hamilton of TrackWrestling.com. Glad you're back, safe and sound.
Me too. Me too.
Touch and go.
It was
getting you back here, buddy.
It was a long trip home. 26 hours from the time I left my hotel room in Vienna until I got back to my house in Cedar Falls. But I made it. It was an adventure, but I'm home safe and sound. Ready to go back over there in a couple of weeks.
Well, Trnava. I'd never even heard of this. Am I even saying it right? Trnava?
Trnava.
Trnava.
You're comparing Trnava, like Trnava and Nirvana. It was like Trnava, Nirvana.
Okay, so I'd never heard of it. Had you before you knew you were going?
No.
Okay, so I'm at least feel a little bit better about not getting it right.
Rome, Kyle. Little Rome is what it's called.
Was it comparable?
I've never been to Rome, so I don't know.
So
I've never been to Big Rome.
Okay, so what would you compare it to stateside? Is there anything that you would compare it to in the U.S.?
Oh, boy, I don't know. It's a pretty interesting little community, 65,000 people or so, and lots of churches, a really cool old historic city. Goes back 600 plus years. Some buildings in the downtown area that built in the 1700s. Really friendly people, and I enjoyed it. I thought it was great.
Did you enjoy the competition? Highlighted by Makai Lewis getting a gold medal. He was the story of the Junior World Championships. Third freestyle competition, and he wins a gold
of his
medal.
Life.
Of his life.
Yeah.
Amazing story. You got a chance to see it there. I've been looking forward to having you break it down what that was all about.
It's so great. Yeah, he didn't start competing in freestyle until Vegas at the UWW Junior Tournament out there, and he finished fifth in April, and then he turns around 5 months later and he's a Junior World Champion, which is an incredible story. But I'm not surprised that he had a lot of success over there. I didn't know that he'd win the tournament because you just never know. I mean, I was talking to Brady Berge about this after his bronze medal match that he won. You know, we were talking about the difficulty of the Junior World Championships, and one of the points that he made is you just never know when the next Sagulayev or Yazdani Chirati is going to pop up from another country and take tournament by storm. And so you could be a returning champion like Kamal Bey or Dayton Fix or Gable Steveson, and somebody else comes along next year and clips you. And that to me was probably even more surprising than Makai Lewis winning gold was the fact that none of those three guys that were as dominant as anybody last year in Finland, that they didn't repeat. But
what do you think that was? I was
I think, you know, just taking it case by case, Kamal got caught up in a match where, you know, they talk about negative wrestling and eliminating negative wrestling from Greco-Roman, and officials kind of let the Russian get away with a lot of wrist grabbing and defensive tactics. And Kamal was just never able to really break through and get to his high flying dynamic stuff in that match. But man, the first couple, three matches that he wrestled at a tournament, incredible. He was absolutely every bit as dynamic as he was last year in Finland, but he's going to have to figure out a way to get through that and not get caught up in matches like that, which is maybe easier said than done. I think it's, you know, if Greco-Roman is going to become more entertaining around the world and more of a high scoring, high flying type of sport, I think officials have to make guys open up and wrestle. Dayton Fix's case got beat by a guy from India who was big and strong and physical. And, you know, Dayton was kind of caught up playing his game a little bit, just trying to maybe wrestle through certain positions instead of diversifying his attacks a little bit in that match. And, you know, he didn't get there are a couple calls that could have gone the other way in that match too. And then Gable just went into the one position where he could get beat. And that's the guy was trying to throw him, and Gable locked up upstairs with him, inside trip position where Gable had the double unders and kind of landed on their sides. And when you get double unders, you're not in a very good position. We saw that with Isaiah Martinez against Vincenzo Joseph in the NCAA finals a couple years ago. And so I think he was probably like, you wrestle the tournament over again. And I think he's the guy I would pick, but you know, it didn't pan out for him on that day. The other thing I think too, for the United States was, and we just didn't see the same kind of pop out of some of these guys that we're accustomed to. Gable, he wasn't really wrestling like the Gable that we've seen in the past, even in the matches leading up to where he got beat in the quarters. Then also just some other guys just didn't look like they had the kind of zip that they normally have. Even Aaron Brooks, who was seconds away from winning a junior world title, I think that there is more pop, more zip in his arsenal than what he showed. I think that some of these guys talked about being tired, and they didn't give him a lot of time to fly over there and get acclimated. And even Makai talked about not being able to sleep and his sleep schedule being all jacked up. And so that may have played a part, but you know, you just got to push through it. And we had an interview with Teague Moore, and incredible stuff that we talked about in terms of dealing with adversity overseas. And you know, he said, you're going to have some stuff that goes against you, you know, with sleep schedules and diet, and maybe the water's not great to drink, and the stuff that he talked about dealing with, and what guys had to deal with 20 years ago going overseas, not getting sleep, not getting acclimated is a walk in the park compared to some of these things. So I think that probably some people at USA Wrestling will dive into this, you know, and we're still talking about on the men's freestyle side, a runner up finish.
Yeah.
It felt like they left some medals on the table, some gold on the table. And I think that it's a testament to how far that the developmental system in the United States has come, that a second place finish and a world champion and five medalists feels like maybe there's some out there still that they could have. It's a little bit of a disappointment.
Especially after last year, I think 2017 really teed us up for the expectations and what can happen. Last year was really remarkable, getting second at cadets and then junior worlds winning it as a team and then senior worlds winning it as a team. And so I think we go in just now with that expectation, even though it's been a year, we expect that world championships are going to happen. And as you know, it just isn't going to be automatic. Things have to go right in order to win a world championship. And Russia is still Russia. They're still a great team and a great country for wrestling. And you better watch out when they do slip a notch. They're going to be right back in there.
Yeah. And the other thing, too, with the United States team, we're still talking about a really, really young team. And I think we kind of overlooked that, or at least maybe I did. The fact that, look at it this way. I mean, Austin Gomez was supposed to be the guy at 61 kilos. He gets replaced by Josh Saunders, who's a junior in high school. And Josh represented himself pretty well, but he was even young. Like, he wrestled on the cadet team in July. Zach Elam didn't know he was going until like 13 days before the tournament. Didn't even have a passport. He goes as Greg Kirkvliet's alternate and makes the junior world finals. Even Gable. Gable's cadet eligible last year when he won a junior world title. So we're talking about a pretty young team. Gable's first year junior, technically. Aaron Brooks, same thing. I mean, they're going to come back with a lot of these same guys being junior world eligible next year. And so I think that that bodes well for the future of United States wrestling and next year's junior world team as well.
We get a chance to focus on the 2018 World Championships with a couple guests today that are really amazing stories, and you've had a chance to write about it, talk about it. Jakara Winchester will be on the program as our second guest, and then James Green will be on the program as well. Never had him on the show, but it's going to be really interesting as we lead into a world championship where high expectations on both sides of the freestyle circuit. And these two athletes are going to be crucial to winning a team championship for the men's and women's side for the United States.
I think both certainly capable of being on the podium. We've seen James already get there twice in three trips. He hasn't maybe wrestled his best yet in 2018, coming off a hip surgery last year. And I think that certainly a guy that's going to be, as you mentioned, pivotal to the United States world team title hopes, but also a guy that can be in the mix to be there wrestling in the finals again this year and maybe bringing home a gold this time around.
Think about how crucial it was last year when we talk about being pivotal. He scored 19 points, got a runner-up finish. The United States won by 1 point. You can't make a mistake. It really is an error-free zone. You have to bank on every single point. So with James Green in that position, he knows that when you place, that's what the number of points you get. There's no other system. And I think that's going to be big.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I don't know if we've talked about this before. I've mentioned it to other people too. And we've brought up the fact that US won by 1 point last year and it came down to the last match. And that was great and everything. It set up for a historic, epic finish with Snyder against Sagalayev with all the chips on the table, in the center of the table, winner take all. But Russia got a gift. They got a big time gift early in that tournament at 86 kilos where they wouldn't have scored points at all. And I think we're talking, what, maybe 7 points that they scored right there, that it would have been a zero if they hadn't got a gift of a call at 86 kilos.
But, it makes a difference.
It's turned out to be an incredible storyline. It wouldn't have been as dramatic if they wouldn't have gotten that call, but I think, you know, boy, Americans would have been irate if it hadn't played out the way that it had. And, you know, it would have been if Sagalayev wins that match, I think we're still talking about, we're going back. We're watching that 86 kilo match where things got goofy at the end. You're right. I think it's to your point, though, every point is going to matter this year. And you got the new scoring format with it's no longer 10-9, so on and so forth. It's 25-20. There's more on the line for winning gold medals, being in the finals, which I think is great.
Yeah.
I think when it's in the 10-9 on down the line, that scoring system of the past, there just isn't enough separation between finishing fifth and winning a gold.
Yeah. And especially with two bronzes, you get the same amount of points. And then you just have this pretty basic tiered system on how you determine a team champion. And it shouldn't be that way. There does need to be some separation between the gold medal, silver medal, and on down the line. So we get a chance to talk to Jakara Winchester, James Green. That's going to be fun to listen to their take. And we just want to keep giving takes on the point differential index. We have 174 pounds. We keep going up the ladder. And I think a couple episodes ago or shows ago, you had talked about this being the weight class you were excited to get to because of Zahid Valencia and Mark Hall.
Yeah.
You remember that.
Yeah.
I do.
My brain's a little bit rattled here after.
For good reason.
This trip home from Slovakia. But I think that I really thought Zahid was going to put up a monstrous number. And then looking at it on a match by match basis and going back and reflecting on who he faced early in the year. And I don't know that, pre-Christmas, anybody at any weight faced as rigorous of a schedule as Zahid Valencia did. When you look at who he faced right off the bat last year, Amin, Bo Jordan a couple times. He beat Mark Hall in the All-Star Classic. And that won't count in our point differential here, but that All-Star Classic match won't. But the NCAA final certainly will. But looked it up, Kyle. Zahid had 7 wins last year against all Americans, 8 if you count the win over Mark Hall in the All-Star Classic. Mark Hall had 6 wins against all Americans. So there's some other guys that are going to be further down the list here that didn't quite face the strength of schedule that those guys faced. But when you take it out even further, 174 was really deep when you look at some of the guys that even didn't wind up on the podium last year.
Think about how deep it's going to be this year. It's going to be really premier weight class.
Yeah, when you start looking at guys moving up and Kemmerer moving up from 157 and some of those other guys as well with Zahid, if he indeed stays put, and I think he's staying put, Mark Hall staying put. Yeah, it's gonna be a lot of fun. Be
lights out, and then you got guys that weren't even all Americans, like a Taylor Lujan who can be in the mix too. So, just tons of fun. And then Makai Lewis, it sounds like he's gonna be potentially at 174.
I think he's going 65, and David McFadden's coming up.
Okay, so it's gonna be. I think I've heard there's 9 returning all Americans, maybe at 174. Wow. If you break down what happened with previous seasons, but. As we look at this point differential index, we look at the champion, 13.4 for Zahid Valencia with that monster schedule. I think you just said you thought it was going to be a little bit higher, but 13.4 is still a pretty darn good number.
It's incredible. And especially if we ever get to the point where we can build the, I've been banging this drum too, strength of schedule metric in there to give you an idea of apples versus apples. Because there's some other guys at this weight class, and we'll get into it a little bit, that did not face the kind of schedule that Zahid faced.
Not even close. Just you mentioning all that in the beginning part of the season, usually that's when you're wrestling your, don't want to say lesser schedule, but maybe more of some of the open tournaments where you do get some reserves or some D3, D2 competition. For a guy that's world class, you're going to likely get falls in that early season. We saw that with a couple guys at this weight class, but Mark Hall.
Let's hang on one sec. Not to interrupt you here, but Zahid's first four matches, he faced three All-Americans. Three All-Americans in the first four matches. He beat Miles Amin. He beat Bo Jordan. He beat David Kocher. That's not even counting the match against Mark Hall in the All-Star Classic. So legitimately, four out of the first five matches were against All-Americans. And then you start throwing in, even before we even get to Christmas, he's got a win over Taylor Lujan, another against Bo Jordan. Midlands, he beat Kocher again in the finals, and then shortly thereafter, Lujan again at the Virginia duels. So he pretty much ran the gauntlet at 174.
Sure did. And when you tabulate that, looking at the first five matches, he has a 2-5, 22-15-3. So that certainly is going to make a difference in what your PDI is at the end of the season.
Yep.
Mark Hall, a little bit higher. He plays second to Zahid Valencia at the NCAA Championships, 13.45. So essentially the same, but Mark Hall did have tons of falls as you were listing off the bout by bout. I didn't think he had that many falls this season. I don't know why. Nothing against what he did during the season. I just didn't know he had that many pins on the season. Kudos to him.
13 of them here by my count.
Miles Amin was your third place finisher. He had a 5.21. And then Daniel Lewis, he had the highest number.
Yeah.
14.74. And you listed off his early season falls. I think he had 6 in a row, 7 in a row, somewhere in there right at the beginning of the season, starting off with an 11. And it looks like he had 6 falls in a row and then had just a nice run of pins throughout the season. Those 22s are going to jack up your PDI, and that's what you like to see.
Yeah, and one of the things that we were talking about off air is 6 of those first 7 matches were 22s. He beat Xavier Montalvo of Illinois 13-2 in the first match of the season, and then he had 6 straight wins at open competitions against non-Division I wrestlers. So strength of schedule comes into play there, doing what he's supposed to do against guys that are probably not on his level. One thing about it with Daniel Lewis, so minus 22 in there because he lost by fall to Mark Hall in the NCAA semis, and he still put up a 14.74.
Man. So you have to think that you take out that fall or just getting pinned or just giving up a decision that it's probably going to be over 15.
17 falls for Daniel Lewis.
Man, that's a monster season, and that's why PDI is such a good barometer of how effective you were throughout the season. Bo Jordan had a 7.23. Jordan Cutler, 5.3. He was sixth place. David Kocher was 6.77, and then 6.67 for Jacoby Smith. Get a chance to digest all of that, and I think it's probably what you had expected, especially with the big three being those 13.4, 13.45, and then 14.74. You were saying that you thought 174 was going to be monster. Three of those guys proved you right, Andy.
Yeah, I thought Bo Jordan's might be a little bit higher too, but you know, reflecting on it, he wrestled a lot of matches where he didn't score a fall.
Yeah.
Wasn't winning a ton by major in tech. So that's where that comes in. And I think he gave up a fall or two in there too. So knocked his number down a little bit. But yeah, I thought Zahid and Mark Hall and Daniel Lewis would put up big numbers just because of the fact they didn't lose much, number one. So they don't have those negative numbers going against them. And then number two, they were putting up a ton of bonus and pinning a lot of people.
So as we consider how we put in strength of schedule into PDI, could we take a page out of baseball? Could we have a PDI and then potentially have a PDI plus where that incorporates some sort of a standard?
There you go, Kyle.
I mean, I think that would make sense because...
Like ERA plus?
Yeah. Just taking it off of that.
Adjusted
and come up with some figure that actually incorporates it. So maybe just... thinking off the top of my head, maybe when you have a Division One opponent, you triple that score. Maybe, and then if it's a non-Division One, you have it doubled or some sort of a format there. And then maybe a junior college, if it's not 4-year, it's just the standard. I don't know. I'm just talking this through as we go.
You're throwing a lot of stuff at the wall here.
I know.
It might stick, Kyle.
It might, but just trying to think of how you really reward someone for wrestling quality competition.
We got to get Seton Hall Pirate caged up with Jason Bryant.
Well,
closet, lock him in there until they get it solved, right?
Well, because we want this to be a stat that you go have throughout the season. You don't want it to be that at the end of the year, you say, oh, he did wrestle an All-American because he was a freshman. You have to have some sort of a barometer throughout the season. And I don't think it's fair to just say this wasn't a quality opponent just because he wasn't an All-American, because wrestling Taylor Lujan, even though he wasn't an All-American, that's a quality opponent. And getting that win is pretty big on Zahid Valencia's schedule.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely.
We had a couple passings this week. Actually one passing, and then a couple weeks ago, we had Mike Milkovic die at the age of 96. He was an icon in Ohio wrestling, a great high school wrestling coach. And then Bob Siddons, the legendary Waterloo West High School head wrestling coach, famously known as Dan Gable's head wrestling coach, had the record in Iowa for 11 state team championships until Brad Smith broke that this past season. But Bob Siddons, one of those iconic figures in the sport of wrestling, a National Wrestling Hall of Fame member. Although he was 93, we're going to miss him being in the state and being coming to the museum periodically.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I didn't know Coach Siddons all that well. Of course, I knew his record and so much about his career, but I didn't know him on a personal level until starting this job and working here at the museum, having an office here and having the pleasure of having him come in on a fairly regular basis a couple of years ago. We didn't see as much of him here in the last year or so, but... Yeah. Yeah, what a terrific guy and such a great memory and a ton of great stories. You could just sit and listen to him tell stories for hours.
And you'd shake his hand and he tried to arm drag you. And he still had that strength right up until the end. And then for me, I didn't know as much about Mike Milkovic, but learning about him, even though he died at the age of 96, boy, what a legacy he had. They called him the father of Ohio wrestling, or the king of Ohio wrestling. So learning about him, that was really fascinating too. So two icons that made a huge contribution to the sport of wrestling, especially at that high school developmental level. I think we are where we are because of their legacy. As we're talking about team success, even at the international level, they were the pioneers. And I think you have to go that far back and say that we're here because of what they were able to accomplish.
Yeah, for sure. And we talked about this on the show a couple weeks ago when we had G'Angelo Hancock on, and we talked about like the influence that high school coaches can have and strong mentors. And you look at Siddons' legacy will live on for generations to come when you consider the impact that he had on Dan Gable's life as his high school coach, and then Gable on so many lives that, you know, during his time as the Iowa head coach, and then all those guys that have gone on. You look at Division I wrestling right now, particularly in the Big Ten. And we look here in the past year, Dwayne Goldman and Barry Davis stepping down, but you still have Tom Ryan. You still have Tom Brands, Terry Brands at Iowa. You look around the country, Kevin Dresser at Iowa State, Troy Steiner out of Fresno State. Yeah. I'm going to forget some. Steve Martin at Old Dominion. We could go on and on, but those guys are on the Siddons family tree.
Yeah, and what a great mental picture you just painted there. You're just looking at that tree. And so someone who even just said when Dan first started coaching that his practices were pretty much identical to what Bob Siddons did as a high school wrestling coach. So you take that and then just you just visualizing what you just said there with all of the Iowa coaches and then that how that branches out. It really does when you start connecting the dots. We're very fortunate to have his legacy and we're still a byproduct of it.
What are some of your favorite memories about Coach Siddons?
Well, other than
by her,
other than the handshake, but it was always just it was his young lads. That's what he always called them. He called them Daniel instead of Dan. I think that was something that was always a great memory. And then I actually asked Dan because Dan's name is not Daniel; it's actually officially on its birth certificate, Danny. And so I asked Dan. I said, "Can I call you Daniel?" And he said, "You're going to have to get permission from Bob Siddons to do that." So I saw him at the Iowa High School State Wrestling Championships, and I said, "Hey, Bob, Dan said I have to get permission from you to be able to call him Daniel. Do I have that permission?" And he laughed and was a little embarrassed, and he said, "Yes, you do." So I'm able to be one of two people to call him Daniel Gable. So it was just fun things like that. And he loved to swim, and he just stayed in great shape, and just had really classic stories that you could listen to over and over and over again. And the other thing too that he would do is he'd have an attentive audience, and he'd say, "If I'm boring you, tell me and I'll stop." And everyone else is like, "No, don't stop. We want to keep hearing these stories." So all those little things you're going to miss. I'm going to miss him stopping in once a week here, but his legacy will live on.
For sure. And you know, we talked about this a little bit off air, you know, a couple of years ago, Coach Siddons stopped by and I brought Buster, my 8-year-old lab in, and he loves people. He goes crazy when he sees people, especially people that he hasn't met before. He gets a little excited. And Coach Siddons came in and was standing out in the hallway outside the office here. And Buster was here that day. And I don't know, Buster's probably come in 6-8 times to the museum with me, but Buster has never been better behaved in his entire life than he was with Coach Siddons here. For whatever reason, Coach Siddons had this calming influence over Buster. So he just laid there out between us out in the hall, didn't hardly move. Like I said, never been better behaved.
I love that story. And you and Sophie had a chance to sit down with him at a banquet, I think, too, and got to know him at one of the Hall of Fame banquets we had.
Yeah, I think that was the one a couple years ago where you were trying to put the recruiting pitch on me to get me to stay in Iowa.
I was, yeah. I remember that well, and it worked. So we got you here. And so we still have you here in the state. Yep. Didn't know it was going to work that you were going to be in the same town as me, but I'm glad it worked out that way.
It's absolutely. Cool.
Now, I got to say, I listened to your On the Mat show with Jason. I thought it was a good show, but I just got to say the imitation from Jason was really weak. I just didn't think that was
the imitation of you.
Yeah.
Me. On the Mat.
I don't think it sounded like me.
It wasn't his best work.
Okay.
No, it wasn't his best work.
Yeah.
But especially like, I don't even think he was trying to imitate when he did that one from the streets of Trnava. He was riding a wave of euphoria after Old Dominion's upset victory of Virginia Tech. I think he might still be riding the wave of euphoria on that one. But
I think that might be comparable to his children being born. He was excited. It was like nothing else. I've never seen him so excited, and he's been excited before, but I'll tell you what, he deserves that win.
He was so energized. He was so energized over that victory.
I think that's pretty spectacular that he was able to get that, but I'm giving him a one or two on the imitation. He does great work on his own. If he's just being Jason Bryant, I gave him a 10, but trying to imitate Kyle Klingman, I'm giving him a one or a two.
I think that's fair.
Nice job though on the show.
It was. Especially the video shows. I think he did a really good job on the video shows that are out there on Facebook.
Yeah.
We've never published them on Track Wrestling or on iTunes or anything like that. They wouldn't work as well.
Yeah, just fun. But, yeah, just being in the streets. I enjoyed those.
Because, we'll have to do them from the streets of Budapest.
Yeah. Definitely, we'll make sure that happens. Our first guest has a wealth of experience at the international level. Two-time world medalist, silver medal last year, got a bronze at the Las Vegas World Championships in 2015. Four-time All-American for the University of Nebraska, and we are glad that he will represent the United States again at 70 kilograms, also known as 154 pounds at the 2018 World Championships. James Green, how are you?
I'm good. I'm glad to be on the show. Talk with you guys. Like I said, it's great to get a little insight on what's going on before we get to Budapest and compete at the World Championships. How you guys doing?
We're doing great, man. We're just excited to have you on for the first time because we get a chance to pick your brain and learn about why you have such a blast double leg and how quick you are. So if you want to start with that, tell us why you're so fast.
I don't know. I guess just a lot of, double leg was one of the first things you learn wrestling. So I liked it. I scored a lot from it and just kind of developed it as I continued wrestling. So and all that quick twitch stuff is just comes with it. So it makes it even better.
And talking to Mark Manning about your upbringing in the sport, he said that when you came out of high school, you were just exceedingly raw, that you maybe didn't have the type of training going into the University of Nebraska that some other people have. When you look back at that, where were you on the spectrum of being good going into the University of Nebraska?
Yeah, Manning had nailed it. I was raw. My athletic abilities and just my will to work hard and, you know, not put my head down just kind of helped me, got me through and got me to a position to get a scholarship from Nebraska. I didn't win a state championship till my senior year, but I was always right there, you know. I didn't have, or my school, we didn't go to the biggest tournaments. You know, just the ones that were on the schedule. We didn't go to the Beast of the East or Ironman, all those, you know, tournaments like that. So whenever I was wrestling on the scene, I just tried to get in as many rounds as I could to get better. So really, once I got to Nebraska, I thought I was a little cocky and a little ahead of myself. I thought, you know, I'd be a big man on campus and was getting beat up during the summer bridge. So after that summer bridge, it just kind of switched after that. And, we're still writing this James Green story today.
James, what was your recruiting story like? Who did you look at? Who contacted you, and why did you pick Nebraska?
So I only went on two official visits. Nebraska had reached out my junior year. You know, they liked what I had to offer. They were saying they saw that I could compete at a high level. They believed in me. And as I stated before, when I didn't win a state title for my senior year, and they were already bought in on me. So I saw some some interest from other schools, but nothing like Nebraska. A lot of people wanted me to also wrestle 149. I wrestled 45 my senior year. So Nebraska, you know, they were happy to have me at 57 and coming out of high school, you know, knowing that you don't have to cut weight, that was just a plus. So I went to visit Clarion. My mom wanted me to stay close to home. She wanted me to stay close to home, so we took a trip for her. And but I already knew. I knew I was going to go to Nebraska. I talked to Penn State a little bit and Maryland, and that's about it, really. Kind of low-key under radar, but if I could do it again, I wouldn't change it. So
Jordan Burroughs is also from New Jersey. He was a one-time state champion as well. Of course, you guys are teammates right now on the world team and both went to Nebraska. Do you remember the first time you met Jordan Burroughs and what influence he had that first meeting?
Yeah, it's weird because he's 5 years ahead of me, so I kind of like was watching him when he was in high school, and yeah, everyone, you know, oh, this kid Jordan is good. So he had a big name in New Jersey, and then when I came to Nebraska, he hosted me on my trip. Just kind of cool, relaxing trip. I mean, I'm not the most outgoing or talkative guy, so it was a little quiet, but once we, you know, warmed up, I kind of got to see what Nebraska was like. I mean, honestly, I could have went on my visit with my visit with anyone, and I already knew I was going to go to Nebraska. I was already born there, but no, it was good to meet Jordan, see how, you know, what kind of work they put in at Nebraska, and just to know that, you know, I could reach those same kind of goals and those same levels, especially being in a room. Like I was saying before, I wasn't in a room with that kind of training, so it was great to see it firsthand, and I was really excited to just get or to be on the team.
I'm going to need Andy's help to recall what the answer was, but we asked Coach Manning if you guys went live for a minute, if he could avoid getting taken down by you in a double leg. He said he could because he hasn't taught you all his tricks. Now we get a chance to ask you, could you take Mark Manning down within a minute with a double leg takedown?
Within a minute, I probably could do it within 10. I don't know, 10 seconds. He's long to do stuff. But Manning, man, he was crappy. It's funny because going back to my recruiting trip, I remember seeing Manning. He was wrestling one of the guys on the team, and he was like just kind of he had good position, and he'd always had good defense. But when he got on top, he'd ride you and throw legs in. And I'm like, man, I can't believe this guy is letting Manning do that. So I'm like, I can't wait to wrestle Manning. And my freshman year, I remember wrestling him, and he could take him down, but as soon as he picked top, it was over. He would really put the legs in on me and turn me. It was bad, but that was in the past. Now at 10 seconds, and I'm on three. So
we put him on the spot in that interview. Kyle made him play a game of true or false. Yeah. And during that game of true or false, we asked him, in 2020, do you expect James Green to be at 65 kilos or 74? And he said, I think the question was, will James Green be at 74 kilos in 2020? He said, true. What do you think?
Yeah, it's very true. I'm still amazed that I even got down there in 2016, but yeah, never again. I'll be putting some muscle on, putting some weight on, and, you know, throw my head away and give it all I got.
When does that when does that start? After 2019, you start bulking up?
Yeah, and it's really, I don't even know if it'd be as much of a bulk up as far as, because I mean, I'm sitting around 165, so it would kind of be really, really fun, especially with the day of weighing. So if it was the day before, I definitely have to get a lot bigger, but I think it's kind of an advantage towards me. You know, I could lift, stay close to weight, eat, I'm like full feed, and it's going to be great. So, yeah, but for right now, we'll focus on this 2018 and then, you know, take it year by year.
Do you and Jordan go live and practice quite a bit?
Oh, yeah. We scrap it out. When we get close to competition, we don't really wrestle as much, but when we're just, you know, a ways out, we'll, you know, roll around and drill together. We can't really practice too much because, you know, then it just leads into live wrestling and then we'll be in there all day. But but yeah, we wrestle quite a bit.
Going back to your college days, you're known for your matches against Dylan Ness. He brought a unique style that you almost can't prepare for. Do you feel like wrestling him all that time in college prepared you for the international style?
Not really. I mean, it's two different styles of wrestling. These guys are more laid back, relaxed. You know, they'll try and score one late. It's a little slow, you know, they're trying to lull you to sleep. So you have to kind of just work harder, especially when they scout you and they know that, oh, this guy's he's got double leg. He's going to take me down. I can't really mix it up with him that much. So it's really clamped down and, yeah, lower your seat. But definitely, I can't compare the two styles. I'd say that really freestyle helped me in my folk style wrestling, especially with my matchups against St. John, being able to control the center of the match and mat and keep their position. So really freestyle translate well to folk style, and you can't really roll, you know, across your back. So it just made me all around better wrestler.
Was there a guy in the collegiate style that you enjoyed getting up for and competing against?
I mean, I like wrestling everyone. All my, you know, as I'm a wrestler of the sport, I'm also a fan. And I respect all the other wrestlers. I knew that I had big matchups coming, so I get fired up for them. I love wrestling. Isaiah, I'm glad I get to come out here and wrestle with you at camps like this and roll around with him. Isaiah, you know, Ness, St. John, all those guys were good. I mean, even going back to, like, my freshman, sophomore, all in wrestling him, you know, because all these guys made me better. So, yeah, I just kind of like wrestling everyone, really.
You were on a 2017 World Team Championship. You had a silver medal that year. You were a huge part of making that happen. Looking back, we're a year removed from that. Where does that fit in the lineage of where you're proud of an accomplishment?
Man, it's awesome. It's up there. I really, you know, you always want to be on a team that's winning, or, you know, winning the world title like that. And I never really quite had that. We've been close, and you know, being able to get it done, being able to be a part of history, and it's nothing like that. You know, everyone was happy that night. I'll always remember that day. Just the fact that, you know, unfortunately I lost, but it came down to Snyder, epic matchup, crazy seeing all the coaches' reactions, the partners, because everyone worked hard, everyone gave it their all, and just to be a part of that, you know, I hope to repeat, you know, back to back. We're looking to repeat this year, and me and Snyder actually wrestled this last day again with each other, so that'll be great. It'll be awesome.
Do you remember where you were in the arena, how you were watching, where you were watching?
Yeah, so it's crazy because we have the, you know, the warm-up area, and we were kind of in the back just watching on the TV. And as that match was going on, I guess they were kind of breaking things down and getting ready to pack up. And one of the employees unplugged the TV, and we're like, and, you know, I think it was like a minute left. So we all, there's a big group of us, just sprint out to the arena to catch the last, like, 40, 30 seconds of the match. And see Kyle win, so everyone's kind of like right there in the tunnel area, and we're all screaming. It was great.
Your Twitter handle is Who Is James G, or Who Is James Green. Do you feel like you're slighted? Do you feel like that was something that you had to have as a Twitter handle to kind of put out there, that you're not Jordan Burroughs, but you're James Green?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it's crazy because just going overseas, or even in Lincoln sometimes, I'm walking and they're like, "Hey, Jordan." And I'm like, "No, I'm the training partner. I'm the other guy. My name's James." So, yeah, back when I first got on campus and when I first hit the freestyle scene, that's like, you know, who is James Green? And my name is James, not Jordan, pretty much. And that's how that came about.
So a lot of people get you guys mixed up.
Oh yeah, all the time. Overseas, even, like I said, even the USA wrestling fans sometimes they mistake me, like, "Oh, Jordan." I'm like, "No, I'm not Jordan. My name is James." I don't know how long you've been following wrestling, but they're two different people. So
have you have you played along with it and made up something so that
sometimes
you, have you?
Sometimes in Lincoln when someone's like, "Hey, can I get an autograph?" And I'm like, "Oh, yeah." And they're like, "Oh, I like watching you wrestle, Jordan." And I'm like, "What?" I just signed my name, James. It's funny.
We talked about Mark Manning being one of your coaches, but you also mentioned Brian Snyder, a unique guy that has a unique skill set. He was at your weight class years before you got there. But what does he add to your arsenal? How is he an effective coach for you?
Yeah, Doc Snyder. He's great. One, he's a lefty, and I wrestle a lot of lefties. He keeps a great position. You know, we've tweeted at each other on Twitter, but I told him, you know, he could still make the world or be the second guy on the world team ladder if he wanted to compete. He's good. I learned a lot from him. He's from the East Coast, so we got some things in common, and I'm glad that, you know, he's a part of the team, my team, and he's taught me a lot, and he's for sure, you know, looking forward to me winning the world title this year.
Man, we're just days away from going overseas for the 2018 World Championships. As far as just where you are in your training, are you tapering off right now? Or are you in that peaking phase?
Yeah, so we actually here in Colorado Springs camp. Been out here for coming on 10 days now. And we did basically like a simulation. As far as the first week, you know, we got here, we traveled, hit it hard, and kind of managing your weight. And then this week, a little lighter, but at the same time, still managing your weight. This morning, I actually made scratch weight and wrestled two matches. So, you know, we're really just trying to simulate how the world championship is going to be. Tomorrow, I'll make 2 kilos and wrestle a couple more matches. And, yeah, just kind of get that feel for what it's like, so I'm not shocking myself once we get there. But, yeah, we'll be ready.
James, who are you taking with you as your training partner?
Colton McChrystal. He was a 41 and 49 pounder for Nebraska. He's from Iowa and Sergeant Bluffs, Iowa. Yep. And yeah, he'll be representing us at U23 at 65 pounds. So it's great. He's got a good feel. He gives me what I need, and Jordan should actually be bringing Tyler Berger. That's who I bought in the past. So we'll have a couple of Nebraska guys out there, which is great for us. These guys getting experience.
What goes into that decision for a training partner? Because that is a pretty big decision to bring over there. You talked about the feel, but what do you want out of that when they're over there, when you're using them in any capacity at the World Championships?
Yeah, so you want the guy to know how to drill, for one, you know, not just be a herky jerk, bruising you up, just trying to drill. Gives you a good feel, and he can hold up. You know, he's not just going to lay over for you. He's going to give you a good, when we're wrestling live, he gives you a great feel, makes you work a little bit. So pretty much, and they got to be obviously around your weight class. So we tried to have it where when we bring Berger, he can wrestle with me and JP. And then when I'm getting down the weight, you know, I can just kind of hang out or drill with McChrystal because he's a little closer to my weight. So really, and, you know, who you're comfortable with. So we rolled around a lot, and yeah, it wasn't that hard. It was either going to be Berger or McChrystal, and it just worked out that we get to bring both of them. So it's nice.
Everyone in the wrestling community, of course, following the Richard Perry story, how well did you know him?
Man, I know him pretty well. Actually, him and his wife came to my wedding a couple weeks ago, August 17th. And yeah, it was like us before we went out to Pound. He's a great guy, fun to be around. He's always, you know, keeping the energy high. Never see him really in a bad mood. So, and he was a great wrestler. He wants to get better. And yeah, he's just a great, great guy to be around. Unfortunately, I actually wasn't there when the incident happened, but yeah, it was crazy once I heard it, you know, because you're just hanging out with a guy one day and then boom, just like that. So I'm happy he's making progress. He's back home now, and, you know, it's only, you know, moving forward from here, which is great, which is really great.
Jordan Burroughs has said that he doesn't plan to stay in wrestling in a coaching capacity. Once you get done with your career, do you have ideas on what you want to do after the sport?
I really, really don't know. I find myself like, oh yeah, I'm about to coach. And then I kind of see what's going on with the coaching. It's like, dang, that's a headache. if I could just do the coaching part and not everything else, that'd be great. But, yeah, it's hard work, and either coaching college or even having my own group, that's what I thought about. But, yeah, we'll see once we come to that road. So and my wife, she's working. She's got her dreams and goals. So maybe, you know, it'll be up to her to kind of play around her aspirations and see how it goes.
All right. What do you think about pop or soda, whatever part of the country you're in? Do you drink a lot of pop?
Soda. I can't get away from the Mountain Dew. I love the Mountain Dew. But I don't drink it that often. I might have it here and there, but especially, you know, coming off a trip, you know, overseas or something like that, like, oh, yeah, I can have a Mountain Dew now. But, yeah, that's my drink of choice if I got to drink soda.
Now that you're getting to be a wily veteran in traveling overseas, you have to give us your tip. When you travel overseas, what should people know?
What should people know?
Yeah, about traveling overseas, whether it's packing a certain thing or knowing something about the culture. What do you make sure you do every time you go on an overseas trip?
Well, with wrestling and then being that we're going to compete, I always make sure that I bring my blender. You never know what the food is going to be like. So I do a lot of smoothies overseas. Got to have a portable charger. Because the outlets are different. You never know if you're on a break while you're traveling, you know, or you just need an extra one, but definitely have that portable charger when you're going out and about in the town. That and bring some bars, whatever you like to snack on, because, you know, some people are different. Some people can't really adjust or they're picky. So it's good to have some things that you're used to. And just be careful of what you're drinking water or eating the fruits. You just got to make sure, you know, everything is good to go and it's just not dirty or anything like that. But pretty much it's just straightforward, especially with going overseas. You pack your essentials, your laptop, try and get that phone plan so you can have service. And that's pretty much it.
James, where's your favorite and least favorite places you've been overseas for wrestling?
Well, Budapest actually is my favorite. I loved it. I've been there twice now. This will be my third time. And I went there during the Christmas season in 2016 for World Championships. So they were really big into the holidays, and that was nice to kind of be a part of that. So once I went there, saw that, I'm just excited to go back now. I'm looking forward to it. My least favorite, I can't really think of any. I mean, I've always had a good time. They, you know, all these countries love wrestling, so they host us pretty well. And, yeah, they always treat us well, especially when there's a big tournament and they know that you're pretty successful. They're looking forward to seeing you. So I just like traveling. I always look forward to traveling.
You realize, Kyle, he's said Budapest twice. He hasn't said Budapest. We've got an ongoing debate about this, James. You're siding with me here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What's your favorite?
Well, I haven't been there, but I know that it's pronounced Budapest, even though I don't like saying it. That's the official terminology.
Oh,
Andy
yeah.
says it's Budapest, which sounds better. I yeah. agree with that, but I got to go with what the actual pronunciation is, and I hope he does too.
Yeah, it used to be two different cities. If you do that, one side is Buddha and the other side is Pesh, which is crazy. Found that out. But
really? Wow.
Yeah, it's nice.
Well, you're
yeah.
teaching us, and hey, we know who James Green is, and he's going to be at the World Championships. We're excited to see you wrestle at 70 kilograms, and we're looking forward to seeing you on the big stage.
Thank you.
All right.
I can't wait. Hope to see you guys there.
All right. We look forward to it. That was James Green. We look forward to another conversation soon. My favorite part of listening to James Green was that he predicted he could take down Mark Manning in 10 seconds. So we have a little dispute here between Manning and his pupil. Manning thinks he can go with him for a minute. James Green saying otherwise. I think we have to find a way to get this settled.
Budapest after the tournament.
I'm with you. And he just talked about going to 163 for 2020.
74 kilos even.
Well, yeah. Same thing if you weigh in on different scales. But I like the guy. Real calm, mild-mannered, but I think he has a lot of good things to say.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a great interview. It was a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It's been fun getting to know James here the last couple of years. Looking forward to seeing how he performs over at the World Championships. I think he's going to be one of the linchpins, one of the X factors for the United States. Kind of know what you're going to get out of Jordan Burroughs and Kyle Snyder. You expect them to be in the mix to win golds. I think Logan Stieber, James Green, those are going to be two of the pivotal players. Jaden Cox, too. I mean, we're talking about some guys that have had multiple losses this year, but have been right there. I mean, in Stieber's case, he's a world champion from 2016. James Green was in the world finals last year. Jaden Cox twice now, a bronze medalist at the Worlds in the Olympics, up at 92 kilos. Sagilayev going up to 97. Jaden could be in the mix to win it all. And I look at those other two guys too. Stieber, 65. He's got a win this year against Haji Aliyev, three-time world champion. Vladimir Konchekashvili moving up as well. So 65 is kind of becoming what 61 was a year ago with maybe the deepest weight class. But that being said, I think that those three are really pivotal in the team race. And you could throw some other guys in there too. I think the United States is going to this tournament with chance to, in my opinion, medal at 10 weights. Now, I don't think it's going to happen that everything's going to fall into place. We saw that at the Junior World Championships where, you know, it's a really tough tournament and things are going to happen. And in Gable Steveson's case, I mean, that's a prime illustration right there. There wouldn't have been a heavier favorite to medal going into Slovakia than Gable Steveson. And, you know, he gets caught in one position and then that guy gets clipped in the semis and all of a sudden Gable's out of the tournament. But, I think the United States has a chance at every weight that if you told me 57 to 125, is there one guy out there that cannot medal? No, I don't think so. But that being said, it's going to be a really, really tough tournament and you got to have some things fall into place to make the podium. And then everything has to go right for you to win a gold medal. But, the pieces are in place to at least go over there and compete for podium spots, I think, at all 10 weights.
Our next guest, Jakara Winchester, has a chance to be a star in women's wrestling. She gets her chance at her first world championships. It's really going to be interesting to see how she's able to translate her big win at Final X, winning over Becca Leathers, a returning bronze medalist who's not returning this season, but she has a chance to make a name for herself. I think she can be a big star.
Yeah, and that was one of the big takeaways for me coming out of Final X Lincoln was, holy smokes, like she was really, really impressive. And that two-match sweep of Becca Leathers, there was nothing flukish about it. She went out, took it from her, earned her spot on the team. And, you know, we were sitting there in Rochester. You were sitting right behind her as we were interviewing her. And she was confident that she was going to go and take that spot. And sure enough, she went and did it.
Our next guest will represent the United States at 55 kilograms, also known as 121 pounds. She is Jakara Winchester. How are you?
I'm fine, you guys.
Excited.
Doing great.
Yeah, we're doing great. We're excited you get the chance to represent the United States at your first World Championships. Are you as excited as we are?
I think I'm even more excited to you guys because I actually get to go out there and do the wrestling and the winning.
And you put that out there. You've had a good season so far. You beat a returning world bronze medalist in Becca Leathers to make the world championship team. You said you're going out there to win the world championships. What gives you the confidence going into this Worlds to know that you can get a gold medal?
Well, I mean, I beat a world medalist, you know, and I just think that my mindset is the fact that being a world medalist isn't my goal. It's to beat the world champion. You know, I need to be the world champion, so I have to beat everybody. And I know I work hard. I feel like I'm unstoppable right now. You know, like my goal is to be a world champion. So you say it enough times, you believe it. You know, it's harder to give up takedowns when you have such a high goal. You know, you set yourself to a higher standard.
I like your story and where you came from, just reading Andy's article that you wrote, he wrote recently about how you were in track and doing other things, and then you found wrestling because it was an outlet to beat people up and you can get away with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tell us how you got involved in wrestling, because it's a great story.
Okay, well, so before I used to do just cross country and track, like simple running. And then I used to get in trouble a lot when I was in like middle school and high school. I used to get suspended for fighting and stuff because people used to bully me and I don't like getting bullied. So I think it's more of an ego thing. And I was tired of running and I couldn't really take rejection well. So I wanted to try out for a different team, but I didn't want to try out for a team like soccer or basketball because I felt like I would be devastated if I didn't make the team. So it was either badminton or wrestling. And since I was already fighting, I was like, well, I might as well do wrestling because I get to beat people up and get glorified for it. I won't get suspended, you know, because this is on the mat and it's a good way to channel my anger. So I started wrestling and I was like a natural at it because I like to fight. So I think that really is where everything came into place because I like to fight already. I was aggressive and it helped me channel my anger.
Well, you won a California state title in your second year of wrestling. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes. I won a state my second year of wrestling and my first year I won North Coast sections.
What enabled
and
you?
That's when I...
Go ahead. Go ahead, Chikara.
Go ahead. That's when I like figured like, okay, well, I'm like, just because you just started doesn't mean you can't be good. You know, that's why I'm like, all right, just because it's my first year going to Worlds doesn't mean I can't win it. You know, you can do great things first time going around.
What enabled you to pick up on things so quickly with it?
I think just because everybody else was like, they'd been wrestling since they were 3 or 4, like, you know, just really, really young. And I felt behind, you know, because I was already like 16 years old and everybody knew everything. They were telling me sprawl and I didn't know what to do. You know, I like had to look around, had to watch videos, had to like really go out on my own to be good. So I think just the fact that I really wanted it that bad and I felt like I needed to catch up to be on the level that I wanted to be on. So, and I'm a quick learner. I'm really athletic. So I think those played big roles into it.
Being from California, there's lots of options for other outlets, whether it's surfing or I didn't even know they had badminton. That was a surprise to me that that would be offered as a sport. Is it interesting being a female and getting into wrestling? Is that kind of an eye opener for people in California when you tell people that that's the sport you chose?
Yeah, because not a lot of people know about women's wrestling, you know, so they're always like, oh, women wrestle, when I tell them that I'm a woman wrestler. And I know I can't be mad at them because it's not like well-known thing. I get it like all the time, but I think it's just the fact that like it's something new, you know, it's growing tremendously. But when I first started, it was something new. So it's like shocking to everybody.
How did you go from the Oakland area out to Missouri Valley for college? How'd you wind up out in the Midwest?
Well, I had a really good coach who was my volunteer coach, Mauricio Tejero, and he was really pushing the college scene on me. And I was at first, you know, because, I mean, from Oakland, you don't really, not a lot of people go to college, you know, it's always like a big deal if you go to college, you're from Oakland, you go to college, you do better things, because the way the lifestyle is, a lot of people get sucked up in the street life, you know, making easy money, doing bad stuff, going to jail, fighting, a lot of stuff like that. So he really was a good mentor for me because he was like, he saw that I was passionate about it and that, I mean, I had good grades the whole time. So he was like, you're not like the typical person. You won't settle for less. You want to go above and beyond. So I'm going to help you. So he helped me with wrestling every single day. I got better. And then we started writing letters to colleges to see, there wasn't like a lot of women's wrestling colleges back when I, in 2010. So I think I had like 7 or 8 choices. So I wrote them all letters and stuff. And then Missouri Valley got back to me and they gave me a scholarship. So I stayed there for the whole 4 years.
When we look at the stigma that you talked about with women's wrestling and some of the misconceptions, I know with Andy and I, we are advocates for women's wrestling. We want to see it grow. We want to see it be as big as possible. When you hear from the fringe about what they talk about with women's wrestling, what are the misconceptions? Why are people maybe hung up on women in this combat sport?
I don't think that they don't think that we can do what men can do, which it kind of sucks to say, but it's frowned upon, you know. We're in California, we didn't have that many girls on our team. There was four girls, so we worked with the men. And a lot, well, the boys on the team. And a lot of parents didn't like that either, you know. They don't want their kids wrestling a girl, you know, for whatever reason. They think that, for one, they're going to forfeit because they don't want them getting beat by a girl, or they don't want them saying, like, woman beater or something like that. But they still to realize that it's a sport, you know, like, people go outside and play on the playground all the time. They're playing their roughhouse, you know. They don't think of it like that. They just, it's such an ego thing. And it kind of sucks because in order for, I feel like, women to get better, you kind of need that extra push. You know, you can go to a certain level wrestling women. But for me in college, what I had to do is I had to go to the women's practice and then I went straight to the men's practice, you know, just to get that extra, to, I feel like men have different, women, they'll be really technical in wrestling. They'll try to finesse you. They'll like use all these setups to do stuff. Whereas a man, he'll just blow through you. He'll use all his muscle on you. And sometimes you need that, you know, you got to be able to move somebody, wrestle differently. So, yeah.
I read a quote that you had that you said that if you could beat a male in practice, meaning at Missouri Valley, you felt like there was nothing you could do against a female in any competition. Was that something you did regularly at Missouri Valley to wrestle against the male competitors there?
Yeah. So I had a really good, the men's coach was really, really supportive of me, Mike Marcos. He saw that I wanted to do, wanted to go to US Open, wanted to be like national champion, wanted to be like Olympic champion, wanted to be on the world team. So he doesn't let like a lot of people in the room because some of the girls, like college girls, you know, they're like, oh, boy crazy and stuff like that. And I was strictly wrestling. Like, I was like, I don't care about these guys. I want to beat them up, if anything, you know? So he let me in the room and he told me, he was like, well, if I'm letting you in the room, you're going to do everything we're doing. You know, I don't care if you're a girl or not. You're going to lift weights with us 6 a.m. in the morning. You're going to go to all of our practices. And my other coach, my women's coach, I don't think he really liked that because he's like, you're going to do our practices too. But I didn't get the push that I need from those practices. So I felt like the women's practice was more of a warm up for me. And then the men's practice is really where it kicked in. You know, I got the more of a fight because a lot of girls shut down when you're like the, if you're the top person on the team, everybody's like, oh, I don't want to wrestle her. They don't have the mindset of, I want to get better, so I want to wrestle the best person in the room. Instead, they're like, I'm not going to wrestle Japan. Where the men, they're like, this is a man's room, you know, I want you out of here, or I want to beat you up, you know, and we both have that aggression and ego, so it makes for good training.
Takara, who are some of the your greatest wrestling influences, people that you looked up to, whether it be men or women in the sport?
My number one person that I look up to is Clarissa Chan. I absolutely love her. She actually came, she was in Columbia training before she retired, and I would go up there sometimes and train with her, or she'd come down. And that, I feel like that brought me to a different level because she was coached by Sammy Henson, and he had great stuff to show me. You know, he took my college wrestling to the next level. You know, I was started placing at the US Open every time I went. You know, I was making national team. Just everything she did, like, even though she's 48 kilos, she makes herself feel like a 60-kilo wrestler, you know? She has great technique. She has a great mindset. She always helps me bring myself back up. She helps me to know that I can always do more, you know? Like, she's part of the reason why I have the mindset, why not, you know? Because she was one of the smaller person people in her weight class, and she was still dominating on everybody. She wasn't down and out. She didn't play the victim, you know? She knew what she needed to do. She needed to lift weights more. She was always in the weight room, you know? She knew she needed more conditioning. She was always on the aero diet. She was always making herself the number one person, not just saying, oh, it's genetics, I can't do something, you know? And I saw that, and I'm like, if she can do it, why can't I do it, you know? Why can't I make myself great? So it really Clarissa Chen is somebody that I absolutely look up to.
Hella Merlis is this country's first Olympic gold medalist in women's wrestling. I know you know her and have a relationship with her, but what have you gleaned from her that you've been able to apply to your career?
So I usually have to wrestle Hella a lot when she comes down for camps, which is really nice, you know, because Olympic champion, world champion, she gives a really good feel. And I feel like if I can get a shot in on Helen, then I can finish on anybody, you know, like she helps. Whenever I drill with Helen, she's so humble, you know, she still asks me questions like, does this feel all right? She's not arrogant. And that's what I love about her, because she continues to grow instead of the mindset of, I'm already Olympic champion. You're nothing. You know, you're just a world team member. You can't tell me anything. She's always taking advice. You know, she'll do a move and say, hey, what do you think I should do? You know, and I like that. And I admire that about her. And that's what helps me to stay humble too, because when I win the Olympics, when I win world championships, I'm going to be like that. You know, I'm not going to be the person that nobody wants to talk to or nobody wants to work with, you know? And I think that Helen, she's a great person, a great wrestler. She has a great feel for wrestling. And whenever, any chance that I get, I try to drill with her just to fill out different motions, you know? And she's not, even though we're in the same weight class, she always helped me with something. Like, she'd be like, oh, I feel like your double could be better. She's always there to help, and I like that about her.
A couple of years ago at the Olympic trials, you did not get a chance to compete there because of an injury. How's everything going since then?
Oh, yeah, yeah. So I tore my ACL and had ACL meniscus surgery. And I was actually going to quit wrestling because of that, because it was like such a hard time in my life. Everything was happening. Which is crazy, because I've never, ever, ever competed at an Olympic trials, and I've been wrestling for a while. But it was really hard for me, but it was life-changing. You know, like, as soon as I tore my ACL, they told me, well, you can get surgery now, and if you do rehab twice a day, every day you'll be ready for Olympic trials. So I pushed, you know, it was so bad that I couldn't walk. So I had to teach myself how to walk again. The sports vet, like, had to teach me how to run and all that, like, simple stuff that you take for granted. So it was a really, really, really hard recovery. And then, and the week before, they told me that I'm not cleared for Olympic trials, so I couldn't go. So then I watched Helen win, and then my goal was to be the first woman gold for the Olympics. And then I saw Helen win my dream. Which I mean, it's everybody's dream, but when you see something like that, then, you know, I'm like, all right, well, I can't be down and out, you know, this is gone already. I can't do that, but I can still be an Olympic champion. I still can be a world champion. So it really changed my mindset. And so far, so good. I mean, I did rehab. I did everything that I need to do. I still do rehab, you know, just strengthening stuff. And it's good. I don't have any more, like, any problems with my leg or anything like that. I think it was, if I had to do it again, even though it was very painful, I would, just because it made me grow as a person.
You're 26 years old. You got into the sport at what, 17? Is that right? 16 or 17 when you first got involved? Okay.
Yeah.
So you take that about 10 years into the sport. That's pretty young. You haven't been around it that long. What's it felt like to grow at that pace? Here you are at a world championship team. You started at age 16, 17, and here you are. What's it like to grow that fast?
It's exciting, you know, like, because I'm always like open to learn. So I'm not burnt out on the sport, you know, like it's still fairly new to me, you know, and I love doing it so much. I think just because I like fighting and stuff like that. So any chance that I get to do something like that, it's awesome. Like, I'm actually 25. I'll be 26 on the 19th. But that's also why I'm going to win world championships, for my birthday gift to myself. But I just think that, like, as I continue to try to get better, you know, like, I just keep growing and growing. My goal is to be the best version of myself, you know, and whether it be wrestling or just everyday life, I want to be the best at what I'm doing. You know, I want my body to be disciplined. I want to know that I can do anything. So wrestling helps that. So it just keeps growing and growing. And I feel like I'm just scratching the surface, you know.
What do you want to do when your competitive days are over? In wrestling?
Probably do some fitness modeling. I have a degree in accounting, but I really want to work an actual job. I don't like working. But I know that I can do it. I can do anything. So I fell out of love with the sport in the summer, and I took a long break, I think like 4 months off, and I started working a regular job in San Francisco. And it actually made me realize, like, well, I took wrestling for granted, you know, like I had to wake up at 4:30 a.m. and then I got off at 3 p.m. And it was like kind of like cleaning stuff or like a lot of labor work. And I didn't like that at all. So I stopped doing that. And then I came back to wrestling. And I think that's part of the success, because I'm giving it everything I have, because I don't ever want to do that.
What's it mean to fall out of love with a sport? What got you to that point?
Well, just for the fact that I saw that I was doing everything right. I was dieting right. I was running, you know, I was making sure I was asleep on time. I was doing everything that I thought that I could do right. And I still wasn't having the results that I wanted. I still was only number three on the national team. I still didn't win the U.S. Open. I still didn't make a world team, you know? And I kind of just got fed up, because I'm like, I feel like nothing, even when I do the right stuff, it's not working out for me, you know? Or I tore something, I tear my ACL, I fracture my orbital, you know, I just keep getting hurt. And I'm like, well, clearly I must not be able to, this is something that I shouldn't be doing. And just getting mad, like, I didn't realize that I need to dictate the matches, you know, not letting the ref in to dictate the matches, not letting them give me a stalling call, you know, like instead of go, 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 I was more of just, I'll sit and wait and do something, you know, whereas now I'm like, if I'm not absolutely dead after the match, then I didn't do my best, you know, I just had a different mindset back then. And I think it was more of me being the victim, like, oh, the ref made a bad call, that's why I lost this match. And then, so I stopped, and then I started working my regular job. And then I realized, I'm like, well, you know, maybe I could have done more. Maybe I could have wrestled harder. Maybe I could have dieted a little better. Maybe I could just, all right, the ref made a bad call. Cool. Throw it out the window. Just keep wrestling, you know, just not letting little things get to me. It's changed my mindset.
How do you get into fitness modeling? What's the next step to get into that?
I really don't know. I'm kind of just focused on wrestling. I mean, a lot of people like, oh, like, I know, but it's like more of people that you know, like a lot of people have told me, like, give me like references. They're like, oh, when we have like random people come to the camps, they'll be like, oh, you know, I know this person, like you can talk to them and stuff like that. But I think it's just who you know, and just putting yourself out there, like marketing yourself on Instagram, like, a lot of people message me and want me to be like ambassadors for their products and stuff like that. I think it's just marketing yourself and just putting yourself out there. I mean, I'm super fit already because I'm a wrestler and we do a lot of like weightlifting and stuff like that, but it'll just be like change of diet. It'll be a lot easier than wrestling actually, because I don't have to fight anybody.
Well, I was going to say mixed martial arts, you like to fight. Why not make that your career step?
Yeah, I know. I do. I thought about like UFC and stuff like that. That'd be super cool, because then I could really just beat the crap out of somebody. But I don't want to get punched in the face. Like, yeah, that hurts, man. Like, you know, like it makes you ugly. And I want to be like, from already being ugly from wrestling, you know, it's kind of hard. Like, so you actually want to be, I want to be able to relax and be pretty, you know, all the time. Like, kind of sucks when you have to, like, I walk around with my hair like that brushed or like sweatpants all the time. And then when people see me actually dressed up, they're like, oh my gosh, Kai, is that you? It's like, yeah, but it's like awkward and you're almost embarrassed to be pretty, you know?
Well, how's your cauliflower ear? Do you have much?
Yeah, I have two actually. What sucks, because I have really, really small ears already. And so I have to buy like a headphone instead of earphones. Like, it's actually more expensive having cauliflower ear. And I feel like no matter how much I have, I still keep getting new cauliflower ear. Like, everybody just keeps banging on my ears. And I don't like headgear because people pull on it during competition. So just something that you got to deal with in the sport.
So you got into wrestling because it gave you an outlet, because you like to fight. Since you've acquired your wrestling knowledge, has anyone that didn't know you had a wrestling background tried to test you?
Oh, yeah, for sure. All the time. It's just funny because I used to get bullied as a little kid. And then that's why I used to beat up people. But now, like, I keep to myself. And since I know that I can, like, beat up people, like, I'll tell them when they're, like, kind of fight me. I'm like, you don't want to fight. Like, I'm like, I don't want to fight. And so I'll kind of, like, power down because I know that I'd be in the wrong if I beat the crap out of them, you know, because I know what I can do. And usually they'll be like, okay, yeah, you know, I'll just put my ego aside, and then they feel like they're big and bad, and then they walk away. But then there's sometimes where you can't put your ego aside, and they just insult you, and then you're just like, take off your sweater, and then they see that you don't have regular girl arms, and you have really muscular arms, and then they kind of size you up, and they're like, you know what, everybody.
That's great. Well, we're excited to see you win a gold medal at the World Championships here in just a few weeks. So all the best with that. This has been really fun having you on the program, and wish you all the best.
Thank you.
All right. For Jakara Winchester and Andy Hamilton, I'm Kyle Klingman. You have been listening On the Mat.
Is part of the Matt Talk Podcast Network. For more wrestling podcasts, head over to matttalkonline.com.